G'day, it's Nigel here. Welcome back to the Sax School Online Podcast. So there's loads of new saxophones on the market these days. Do we really need another one? And how can you make something new that's significantly better anyway? Well, to answer these questions today, I'm talking with Jamie Straker. Jamie's the head of Europe's biggest saxophone retailer, sax.co.uk, and they've just released their Atlantic saxophone range. So we're going to be chatting about the whole design process, the thinking process, what inspired them to even make another brand of saxophone and why their Atlantic saxophones are different. It should be a really interesting conversation, so I'm really glad that you can join me for it. Just before we do dig into that conversation though, if you love learning about saxophone and playing better and you enjoy this podcast, could I just ask you to share it with somebody else, maybe just even one other person? It would really help us to reach more people like you, make more friends, and you know, we'd really appreciate that. Okay, let's get stuck in. So Jamie, you know, we've got loads of people learning with us at Sax School, like thousands, but there's hundreds of them in the UK here. And I'm always saying to them that if they get the chance, they should go pop down and check out your London shop, the sax.co.uk shop in London, because it's just brilliant. You've got so much stock in there, so many different saxophones, so many different finishes and brands and all sorts to check out. It's brilliant. However, it also makes me think, with so many of them on the market now, what inspired you guys to go and design a whole new range of saxophones?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been working in music retail now for about 20 years. And throughout the years, I've done the marketing for sax.co.uk, and nothing excites me more than seeing a new instrument. I think that's the same for a lot of us, right? People tell us not to get too excited. But I think there's something, you know, built within, and you know, people say, you know, focus on your playing, which of course is the most important thing. But I also believe that, you know, an instrument can really inspire you. You know, if you've got it hanging up on the wall or somewhere around and it's looking at you saying, you know, play me, you know, pick me up, give me a go. I feel like that makes you practice more. And so to answer your question, I felt like there weren't too many unique instruments on the market. I feel like a lot of saxophone manufacturers nowadays, you know, they're trying to focus on replicating something from the past, which is not anything necessarily wrong with. But I feel like there's a lot more to be said about creating something newer and potentially different that has its own character, that has its own vibe.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds exciting to me. And I do completely agree with you. It's something I talk to our members about a lot, actually, finding a saxophone that actually makes you want to pick it up and play it, that when you walk in the room, it's, you know, it just, it's exciting. And you get a buzz every time you blow through it. You know, I don't know, it could be the sound, it could be the way it vibrates, it could be, I don't know, the way it looks, but either way, it needs to be something that really inspires you.
Yeah, absolutely. As I was saying, I mean, it is obviously the most important thing is practice. You know, practice is number one. But I do think equipment is very important, not only that it facilitates you to play to the best of your abilities, but really inspires you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that you want to do something different to what other people, other makers are doing. So like, where do you start? How do you start that process? Because I agree with you. When I look at new saxophones, I get to test a few here as well. And for the channel, the YouTube channel, and a lot of saxophones tend to be kind of the same, right? They're either like, I don't know, to me, it seems like they're maybe Yamaha derived or they're Selma derived. So where do you start the whole process?
Okay, well, this has been the hardest part of the project and the main reason it's taken so long. This first model has actually taken me about 5 years from start to finish. The problem being is that when you approach most factories to make you a saxophone, they give you a catalogue with a load of product codes on there and they say, yep, which one do you want? Okay, send us your logo. What lacquer do you want? Right, there's your new product. And I think this is part of the reason why a lot of modern, mainly Taiwanese instruments are so similar, because they're picked out of a catalogue, they're branded and they're sold. But it was really important for me to start with a blank page and choose elements from different component designs that would work together to create something a little bit different and new and fresh. After a lot of searching through different factories, I finally found one that was willing to sort of work with me to, you know, try different things out and create things that not are only aesthetically, you know, really pleasing, but also, you know, it plays slightly differently and it has its own sound and character. And I mean, Taiwan's a really interesting place. I don't know if you've had the chance to get out there, have you?
You know, I haven't, but there are so many amazing saxophones coming out of there these days. And it's funny, I think there's that a little bit of a stigma that some people have of, oh, it's not made in America, or it's not made in France, or it's not an artisan sort of handcrafted, maybe in Italy, saxophone, it can't be as good. But actually, they're amazing. And not only are they amazing, am I right in saying that so many of the manufacturers now, you may not even be aware of, are actually producing their saxophones over there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what was so interesting, like the first time I went out there, was the pride that they have in saxophone manufacturing. So there's a city outside of Taiwan called Taichung, and they have a long, rich history in saxophone design and manufacturing. And there's a certain area called the Huli District. And within this district, everything is saxophone themed. It's absolutely amazing. So you go down the streets and all the street signs have got saxophones on them. There's a big statue in the middle of the district. So they're so proud of this history. And it's really evident to see in the quality of their instruments. And so what was so interesting was visiting different factories and meeting different people. So many of the factories are run by what they call their third generation. So you have people running these factories that are still in their 70s or 80s. You know, they've been doing this for so many years. But the problem I had in terms of, you know, creating something new is that these folks would very often not really want to do anything different. You know, they had their set formula, it worked for them. Of course, they're creating amazing instruments, but they weren't really willing to do something new. So I managed to find a younger, sort of more dynamic team of people who are willing to take on this project, you know, take on my ideas and run with it really, which has been really exciting. And even though, you know, I found these guys, you know, the whole process has taken so long, you know, so many different proto models coming back and forth, because with the saxophone, you can make the smallest changes, you know, maybe to the angle of the neck, you know, to any of it, and, you know, can make a big difference. I mean, have a look at some products on the market, you know, these tone enhancing tools, you know, they can be a tiny bit of metal, which, you know, people are saying make a huge difference. So if you think with the, you know, fundamental design of the saxophone, you can change it tiny amounts and it can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating, actually, that you've approached it in this way. I think it's inspiring. I'm really excited to actually get one of these in my hands and have a blow and see what you've been up to. So you mentioned that there were loads of elements that you wanted to change, and I can understand why that'd be a challenge talking to a factory that, you know, are used to producing things in a certain way. So were there certain things, like certain elements on the saxophone that you wanted to combine? Where did you start that thinking process?
Yeah, so I mean, starting with the thing we actually changed the least was the keywork, funnily enough. And I mean, the keywork on the saxophone is a really interesting thing to me. I mean, often I'm in the shop and I'm looking at it thinking, how has this happened? Like, how has it evolved into this? It's amazing. And it hasn't really changed that much since the Selma Mark VI. And I am sure there are more logical ways and more intelligent ways of laying out the saxophone, because you look at it, it looks quite archaic, doesn't it? It looks like it makes no sense. And I think especially when you're starting the saxophone, you look at it and it looks so daunting. You know, you compare it to a piano or a guitar, you know, where everything's sort of laid out in a very linear fashion. You sort of think, wow, what am I ever going to learn this? But the thing is that because, you know, most student saxophones, most of the keywork is laid out similar to the Selma Paris design. That's what people are familiar with. And so often when we have instruments in the shop that have slightly different keywork, Carworth is a good example. You know, they have a different key layout. People often don't actually get on with it that well because it's not familiar to them. So I think it was really important, although I wanted to, you know, create something new, you know, there needed to be certain levels of familiarity to the players. You know, they want to get on it and feel at home almost straight away. And having tested out different keywork designs with different players, it was actually the Selma Paris kind of design that seemed to work best across the board. Something else that was very important to me was actually to test the instrument with a wide variety of players. What you'll find that most manufacturers do is they give them to professional players who, of course, are, you know, incredible. They sound amazing on anything. And the thing is with pro players, they could play, you know, something that's beaten up and hasn't been serviced for a couple of years and sound fantastic. Where actually, you know, the more sort of beginner and intermediate market, you know, them playing your instrument is almost more representative or better representative of how well it plays.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, that's something that I actually see a lot amongst our sax school members, because we've got a lot of people, adult learners, who are maybe starting their saxophone journey, you know, a bit more mature as well. So they maybe have the facility to go out and buy lots of different types of saxophones, but they're still are developing their skills, right? So we see people who get frustrated because they've got what they think should be a brilliant vintage saxophone, but they actually find it's quite difficult to play, you know. So, yeah, it's got to be easy to play for somebody at the beginner. And that's also really important for their learning development, because if you reach that roadblock earlier on in your journey, it can really put you off. So,
absolutely. So it was very important to us to – they're all set up in our workshop at the in the shop. And my technician, Lewis, I'm not sure if you've met him before, but he is very, very particular. He needs to make sure that everything is perfect. And something that we find with a lot of brand new saxophones is the keywork feels quite heavy. And of course, you know, you can have it lightened by a technician or over time. It does tend to sort of, you know, bed in and play a little bit lighter. But what we're trying to do is, if, you know, from day one, that it feels light. It feels a bit more nimble to play than other saxophones on the market. So that was very important to us. And then in terms of the keywork again, so yeah, like I said, it is very, you know, very similar to the sort of Selma Paris keywork, just because we want people to pick it up and just instantly feel happy. But we have sort of adjusted the table keys ever so slightly just to feel a bit more ergonomic as well, because that's an area, of course, that, you know, can be a bit troublesome for some people, you know, 100%. Having to stretch down. So that was sort of a key, key area of concern.
Key, yeah.
Well, sorry, I just threw a pun in somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, got it. Okay, cool. Well, then it makes sense to keep the keywork familiar and consistent. Hey, real quick, if you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to follow it. And if you're feeling really inspired today, look, it'd be awesome if you could leave us a 5-star review. That would just make our day. All right, thanks a bunch. Let's get back to the episode. So the other elements of the sax, what other things did you experiment with? I mean, there's the neck, there's the bell, the type of material it's made from.
Yep, exactly. So something that, it's a funny one, a lot of people ask for in the shop. And sometimes you think, well, that's impossible. They ask for a dark sound that's bright. And I know that sounds, it almost sounds ridiculous saying it, because you go, well, they're two different things. But actually, there is actually something to be said about that. Whereas I think you can sort of cover, you know, certain harmonic frequencies where you do almost get both. And I think it was very important to me to create an instrument that had an underlying, you know, bass, warm and depth, because that's almost the thing that's, you know, instantly satisfying to you as a player. It is to me, at least. I mean, I come from a guitar background initially, and I used to play with, you know, big 4x12s and things, and it was that room shaking ability. It's also why I love the baritone saxophone that really got me going. So I sort of thought, okay, so if we can create a sound that has that underlying depth, but also with, you know, that sizzle and edge on top, and try and cover all the frequencies as much as we can, that should hopefully give us the most sort of satisfying all round sound. You know, has a nice core sort of projection as well.
How do you do that then? How did you achieve that?
Yeah, with lots and lots of prototyping. The thing is about it, it's almost like there's not like I'm sure there is a scientific formula somewhere. But it was just in terms of like, so prototyping different like bells, as you say. So it was like the enlarged bell versus the smaller bell. So in terms of that, we found that the large bell did give you more projection, as you'd think it would, which just gave you a slightly more room-filling capability. And then in terms of the neck, I mean, the neck is something that, you know, we all sort of take for granted, really, and we just stick with whatever comes with the saxophone. And I think the reason why most people focus on mouthpieces rather than changing the neck is because the mouthpiece is a bit more exciting to buy, to be honest with you. I feel like it's more fun having different mouthpieces, and, you know, they're all marketed in a certain way, whereas necks just seem to be this kind of, you know, quite boring object that we plonk on the end of our saxophone.
Also, though, Jamie, I wonder if it's more difficult to find a replacement neck that's going to fit size-wise and all that sort of stuff. It's not as easy to... Like, you go to a saxophone shop, it's not as easy to find a bunch of different options for necks as there are for mouthpieces. I bet also part of that is because of the manufacturing and the fact that there isn't a consistent consistency with the sizes for next, is there?
So what's interesting is we've experimented with this in the shop because we know how important the neck is. And we've made a real conscious effort in certain periods of time of stocking, you know, a huge selection of different necks. And you're marketing them, saying to people, look, this makes a massive difference. And whatever we seem to do, people just don't get excited by it and they don't buy them. So we've given it a really good go. And that's actually the reason probably why you won't find a good selection of necks in shops, is because they simply just don't sell. Of course, you sell the odd one here or there.
That's actually really interesting to me because the neck does make a big impact on the sound of the saxophone, right? I mean, it's at the top of the instrument and you can achieve a lot. I mean, I've actually been experimenting with a P. Moriart silver neck on my tenor. I'm finding on my Guadala tenor that makes a difference. You know, I like the different timbre, and I like the different necks you can get on the Yamaha saxes. I think they make a big difference. So that's fascinating that people don't get it yet.
No, they don't. They don't. And I just think it's because people don't get excited by it. I think that's mainly what it is. You don't see a new neck coming out and go, oh my God, wow, that looks so cool. It's so glamorous. Yeah. My money, do you? But with mouthpieces, you do, don't you? You see a new mouthpiece marketing from Jody Jazz or Theo Wani. You know, they got their glamorous videos and, you know, top players playing them. You think, yeah, I'm going to get that. And then you open your drawer that's already got 50 in there, add it to the pile.
that little guilty feeling, but also some satisfaction, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But we all love it, don't we? They all say,
So what did you do with your neck then for this new? By the way, we haven't mentioned it. It's called the Atlantic, right? The new range of saxophones.
Yeah, it's probably quite important, actually. Yeah, I should probably
mention that.
Got a T-shirt on in here, but it's a bit cold.
Oh, nice. And yes, actually, sorry, one other thing. I know I'm being rude and talking over here. The other thing I wanted to just point out is that, so it's called Atlantic, and also you're building, or you've built, your target was to build a pro-level saxophone, right? This isn't a beginner instrument. Is that the sort of market that you're aiming at or standard you're aiming at?
Yeah, I just wanted to initially design an instrument that just had every bell and whistle on it possible, basically. In terms of Taiwanese manufacturing, I haven't held back on anything at all. I wanted to make the best instrument possible. And it's actually something I got from Yamaha, where they use what they call a top-down design process within their models. And I think it was important to get this flagship model as good as possible. And as I said, it's taken 5 years to get to this point. And then what I can do is utilize, you know, the designs and elements from this instrument and strip it down into a more affordable, probably intermediate instrument in the next year or two. Once I've had a holiday and a break after this ordeal. So it was important to sort of set the, you know, foundation with, you know, an incredible instrument. Well, hopefully, you know, everyone will find it incredible. We absolutely love it. And then work down from there. It's unlikely that I'll do a student instrument. But I will be looking at a more affordable intermediate level instrument as well in the future.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love the sound of everything about what you're doing. Now, the fact that you're trying to do something different, that you've gone to such lengths to test and experiment with different combinations of things to get something that's exciting and stands out. So we know it's a pro-level instrument. Are you doing an alto and a tenor? And what finishes are you doing?
Yep, alto and tenor. So initially we're starting with a cognac lacquer, which seems to be very fashionable at the moment. I mean, I personally love the cognac lacquer. I almost think it's sort of the new gold lacquer in a way. You know, it has a rich opulence to it and it changes colour in the light. It looks absolutely beautiful. And the engraving really pops out against it as well. Just to touch on the engraving quickly, that was also something very important to me because a lot of manufacturers nowadays, I mean, you know, should really call out Selma Paris, but I'm going to do it anyway. They're moving to sort of laser etch designs that are done by machines. And for me, I do think it's a bit of a shame, really, because I think there's such artistry in the engraving process. And often these engravers, you know, they've been doing it for decades. And I just think it's fantastic. I mean, I think the best engraving in the world is probably Yannick Asawa. I think, do you own a Yannick Asawa?
No, but I've had a bunch through here and I agree. I think they look fantastic. Mind you, I've seen the pictures of your new Atlantic saxophones and the engraving. It's one of the things that really stood out to me. I think it looks beautiful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, the engraver that works in the factory, he's been there for literally decades now. And yeah, the skill and the attention to detail is remarkable. And again, it's just another one of those elements that, you know, when you get an instrument and you pick it up, you just think, wow, that's, it's a work of art in a way. Here's this person that's, you know, worked on these skills for, you know, 20, 30 years, and they've, you know, put a piece of art on my instrument. I just think it's really, really inspiring to me. And, you know, I look at laser etch designs and I feel like it's just a bit of a shame, really, that a robot has made that for you. And of course, aesthetic is only, you know, it's a minor part of the project, but I do think it's really important.
So are the new Supremes then, the engraving, is that done by hand or is that done with laser?
No, it's done by a machine. Yeah, they have a...
So even on their top-end Selmers, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, even on the top-end Selmers, I think it's just to save time. I mean, the Selma Supreme... Yeah, it's a remarkable instrument. It's absolutely fantastic. And the most popular instrument that we actually sell at the moment, which is quite something. But yeah, that element of it, yeah, is no longer done by hand, which I think is a bit of a shame, really.
Maybe there's a shortage of those older, trusty, engravers. Maybe it's a dying art, you know?
No, definitely. You know, a problem throughout the last couple of years, especially throughout the pandemic, was actually finding skilled staff to work in a lot of these saxophone factories. As you say, I mean, these are such specific skills. And unfortunately, a lot of younger people don't want to get into, being a saxophone tone hole puller or, you know, something niche like that. So you might find, like in our store and other stores, that stock has been difficult to get hold of. And this is one of the reasons, yeah, finding saxophone technicians and factory workers has been very hard, yeah.
So Jamie, what about the material? Everyone's going to want to know what material you're making the saxophone from. Have you chosen anything different here?
Yeah, so actually it might sound boring, but we settled with brass in the end. We did try bronze, we tried silver plating, and it is quite a hot topic in terms of what the material does. Everyone seems to have a different opinion. And my opinion is that the material doesn't necessarily change the tone as much as you might think. I think it's mainly an aesthetic thing, to be honest, the way the saxophone looks. And also mainly the way the saxophone projects. I think... especially when you're recording them. We've done some tests again just through the shop, and it might be, well, it is the reason why we've never put a video out actually saying, like, okay, what's the difference between bronze, silver, you know, brass and solid silver, lining them all up? Because what's happened when we've done these tests and recorded them, they all end up sounding almost exactly the same through a microphone. So my theory is I think it changes the way it projects ever so slightly. And in my opinion, I feel like the only one that really makes a big difference is solid silver, to my ears at least. That's the one whenever someone plays it next to me, it's always better to listen to someone else playing it, I would find, to sort of try and work out the differences. Is with solid silver, there's an instant kind of room-filling quality. But yeah, we didn't really have the budget for solid silver instruments quite yet. So so brass... And I think there must be a good reason why, going back to Selma Paris, you know, they only make brass instruments. I think brass almost had the best sort of, yeah, like balance in terms of this projection I'm talking about. But it's a funny one because everyone seems to have a different opinion on it. But
yeah,
mine
it's
seems
a hot
to
topic.
Be, yeah, it is. Yeah. Mine seems to be it's about the way the saxophone projects rather than the actual tone. But I'm sure you'll find someone else who says that's absolutely rubbish. I think it's this. But it's what makes it quite interesting in a way.
It does make it interesting because everyone does have an opinion and there's so many different elements to go in there. It's not just about the sound, as you say. It's about the way it makes you feel and the vibrations you even get back from the saxophone. But from an audience listening point of view, it's not always apparent. That's really interesting. So you're doing an alto and a tenor at the moment. Are there plans to do soprano baritone as well?
Yeah, I think I'm going to focus on the alto and tenor pretty intermediate model first. And then move over to the soprano and the baritone. I think because, you know, I have like the foundation of this design now, I can utilize that within these alto and tenor models. And then when I start with the soprano and baritone, because fundamentally they're such different instruments, that's probably going to have to be a whole other separate project of prototyping. And, you know, I could go down the easy route of, yep, give me the catalogue, you know, what other saxophones do you produce? Write that one there. Yep, here's my name. but it's just not what it's all about. And it's been very important to me to create something that's, you know, got its own vibe and it's a bit more interesting.
Yeah, look, I think it sounds fantastic, Jamie. Something that bugs me when I look at pro saxophones, the more expensive ones, is that it seems to me that some of them are really built to appeal to people who are looking at it just from an aesthetic point of view, and they're not really thinking about the way they actually play. You know, to me, a saxophone is a tool. I mean, I've had my saxophones for a really long time. This one I've had for like 30-something years, and my old trusty 62, and I love it. It works for me. I'm familiar with it, and I can rely on it. It does everything I need it to do. But saxophones can be super, super expensive, and sometimes I think a lot of that cost is down to the way, you know, things that they're putting in that really are just making it look nicer, but not necessarily making it play better. And so I love the way that you're approaching it from a different angle, where you're producing a saxophone that's not going to be ridiculously expensive. They're going to be functional, and they're going to look great, and they're going to be a bit different as well, stand out. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, what I wanted to do was tick all the boxes, really, because I think both sides of it are important. You know, the aesthetic's important, and of course, most important is the playability and the way it sounds. I think all of them just contribute to the general way it feels and the way it makes you, just the way it makes you feel when you open up the case and you think, this is amazing, I love it, and then you play it. It's from every part of the process, from just, you know, looking at it to putting it in your mouth, blowing down it, hearing it back if you've recorded it, you know, all of these elements I wanted to tick. And actually something that was also quite important in terms of the testing process was actually to record all the instruments. You know, so many players nowadays promoting themselves mainly on social media platforms. You know, there's probably more players, you know, putting themselves out there in that way rather than actually going out there into the world and gigging. I mean, obviously debatable, but you get my point. There's a lot more people heading in that direction. So with every single instrument, we also recorded them as well, just to see how they sounded and how they came across through microphones, which I know isn't going to be important to everyone, but hopefully it just shows the attention to detail with every single element that I took over it. For better or worse, I'm quite particular with things, and it keeps me up at night thinking about what case I should supply it with, or what mouthpiece. And in terms of that side of it, I wanted every single part of it to be something nice, because again, so often you'll get a saxophone, you know, within this price bracket, you know, sort of the lower end professional price bracket, and you know, it comes out in this massive big plastic horrible case, and you just think, it's a bit disappointing. Yeah. You open it.
Well, that's the first thing I need to update. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you shouldn't, when you're spending that money, you shouldn't really need to update anything. And you sort of open the case, and it's got some strap in there, which sort of you just throw straight in the bin. You know, that's gone. Mouthpiece. Oh, what's this? Like, that's a waste, isn't it? Straight in the bin again. So every single element, you know, every single thing that comes with the saxophone should also be really useful and should be really nice, and you like having it. So it's coming with a really lovely leather strap. The mouthpiece I've designed in conjunction with Sios. So I thought the Sios mouthpiece worked particularly well because it sort of runs in line with what I've been trying to do with the saxophones, that it's something sort of, again, unique and bespoke. So with the mouthpiece, we actually created a totally new mouthpiece using their 3D printed technology that's complemented the saxophone really well. And I appreciate that most people are going to have their own mouthpiece. You know, they'll have something that's specific to them that they really enjoy. But I at least think it's nice to, you know, open the case and have something you can use, and it will give you something maybe slightly different. Or if you're, you know, a beginner and you've still only got your Yamaha 4C, you know, I've got a really nice mouthpiece to use as well. So yeah, it was important to me that
good starting point.
When you get the saxophone, you know, every single thing that comes with it is something nice and not something crap you're going to throw in a bin.
That sounds great, Jamie. So, look, I'm excited. I can't wait to get hold of one myself and to have a play and experiment with it and share it with our saxophone people as well. So when are the Atlantic saxophones going to become available?
Yeah, they're going to be available mid-April. They're going to be available from the shop, so sax.co.uk or Sax as we're calling it now. I'm also looking for other saxophone retailers to hold them. So if you have a preferred shop to you, you know, get in contact with them, get them to send us an email at atlanticsax.com. You can also purchase them direct from there. Yeah, and I'm excited to get them out into the world and excited to send one to you as well, Nigel.
Hey, don't forget you can grab the full transcription from today's episode over at saxschoolonline.com/podcast. And we'll also include links there where you can go and check out sax.co.uk and the new Atlantic saxophone range. I think you're going to like them. They sound really, really interesting. Also, if you're not yet a Sax School member, there's a link where you can also grab a 14-day trial for Sax School. It's a brilliant way for you to go and see what we're doing, see how we're helping thousands of players from all around the world at all levels too. So with the 14-day trial, you get a chance to try out our thousands of lessons. You can also get some help from our amazing team of tutors, connect with our community, even attend one of our regular live stream sessions. There's loads to keep you busy in there. It's all free to get started, and there's a link below. But that's it for today. Keep practicing hard, and we'll catch you next time.